Welcome back to Raising Rare. We are in our fifth season talking about the joys, challenges, and surprises of raising children with a rare disease. Our co-hosts, Sanath Ramesh and Brittany Ratke, will keep you updated on their kiddos. And we hope our lineup of guests will give you new insights and hope. My name is Kevin Fryert. Today we are talking to Josh Hoyle, one of Brittany's friends and fellow travelers. He's a stay-at-home dad whose daughter has boring opit syndrome. When I say stay at home, I'm really understating it. I think you're going to be impressed. But first, how are Raghav and Everly doing this week?
Everly is doing pretty good. We're coming off a hospitalization and we had some downtime and then traveled to Mayo Clinic and had about 13 appointments in 3 days, but super excited to stay at Ronald McDonald House. They did a nice Easter egg hunt for her and me too. I enjoyed it. So she's doing pretty good today.
So glad to hear that.
How's Raghav?
He's doing good. We've had a good 2 weeks run, so I'm happy. I can't predict what the weekend is going to look like. I'm anxious, but you know, good so far.
Small victories, right?
Yeah. No, I'm so glad you guys are back home too.
Me too. And so is my son Maverick. He really misses us during those. So it's great to be home, be in routine, and be in our own space. It's really nice. So, well, today I'm so excited for this. We have my good friend Josh Hoyle. And Josh and I met all the way back in August of 2018 at the Mayo Clinic, which ironically, I didn't even meet Josh first. I met his son, Cole, who I think really did the intro for all of us. Wouldn't you agree, Josh?
Yes, I would. He's a gem, man. He introduced us to you guys and other families as well. So he was a great introduction for us.
Oh, I love that. Since we're on the topic of your family, can you tell me a little bit more about everyone in your family?
Yeah, so I, with my wife, Kristen, we've got four kiddos. We've got Cole, Chloe, Riker, and Isabella, ranging in age from 2 all the way up to 11. And so our house, no matter if there was medical issues or medical complexities going on or not, we've got a busy house, so we keep going.
Yes, and you guys always have just showcasing kind of everything you have going on and the love and each of your kids ranging in age. And then the other side of it, obviously, as you mentioned, is the medically complexity of everything. And for me, you and Kristen have been such a pillar of support since really day one, since we met you guys in August of 2018. So I'm so glad this worked out for us to chat today.
Where did you, Josh and Brittany meet? At Mayo?
Yeah, we met really through the Child Life Center, I guess it would be, with Cole. We were still in the hospital with Chloe after she was born. We spent 129 days in the hospital there between the general floor and the pediatric ICU with Chloe. And so our oldest son was the only child we had at the time other than Chloe. And so he was down playing bingo and doing music with all the other kids while we were in the room with Chloe. And so that's how he brought us together.
I vividly remember probably we would take Everly from, we were on the medical floor at that time, and we would go down every morning to the music class and sat next to Cole, which then ironically we talked to Cole, I think, on the walk back from Mayo to Ronald McDonald House, not even realizing who you guys were. And I think once we got to the house, we're like, oh, you're Cole's parents.
Yeah, that's the way it goes sometimes.
So Cole was
our kids are great introductions for us. We met so many friends through Cole, because Chloe was in her room most of the time. She wasn't out getting to go out and meet others. So Cole was our introduction to so many other families. And I'm so glad to hear that, like, we have friends there that we met that, you know, we're going through things that, you know, have been pillars for us. And we're just so glad to hear that we can be, you know, be a part of, you know, that for you guys. And, you know, 'cause that's really, we want to help others. And so I'm glad to hear that you guys feel that way about us and that we can be there for you.
Josh, could you tell more about Chloe and the condition she has?
Yeah, so Chloe has boring opus syndrome. She's one of about 250 people at this point that have boring opus syndrome. When she was diagnosed in 2018, there was only about 150 diagnosed at that point in time. But with more and more testing going on, DNA testing and stuff, they have been able to diagnose more children. Boring opus syndrome for Chloe, it means, you know, she's got severe developmental delays. For Chloe, she was born with a cleft lip, and they have repaired that since. But she has had to get a trach. She's on a ventilator most of the time. She is fed by G-tube. She's severely nearsighted, has some hearing loss, she's got contracture of her extremities, she's got short, long bones. It really affects almost all aspects of her, you know, of her body, even if it's stuff that we aren't seeing and you know, working with, you know, there's underlying stuff going on, you know, that we're having to watch for Wilms tumors and different things like that to protect her and to make sure and give her the best chance of longevity of life. So, and I think, you know, probably one of the things that we see and that everybody, you know, notices on her is that comes along with boring opus syndrome. She's got a little bit of like a stork bite, I guess maybe some people call it, but a little bit of a birthmark on her forehead that's shaped like a heart. So she is our princess and of hearts and bow. So,
well, she's a princess. We got to saw her in video a few minutes ago, and she's just adorable.
Thank you.
I know when we talk about our kids, their medical challenges are what come almost the first before we talk about our kids the way we do, right? But I think it's just, you know, all of these challenges are just a part of who they are, and I'm glad we are able to embrace that. When you describe her extremities, like long bones shortening, it's very similar to what my son has. And so I'm curious, like, how did you first learn about this condition, because it's so rare? How did they diagnose Chloe?
Yeah, so, you know, we first knew that there was some concerns when Chloe was still in utero. And so through the scans and stuff like that, they were able to tell that, you know, she had a cleft lip and that her long bones were short and that she had some contractures for extremities. But they really didn't know the full extent of everything that was going on at that point in time. They kind of give us a long list of, these are all the concerns that we have. Unfortunately, you know, at this point, we can't diagnose it. But once she's born, then we'll be able to connect the dots and we'll be able to formally diagnose Chloe. And unfortunately, once Chloe was born, then there was just more and more questions. The answers didn't come. And we quickly learned, you know, what being a special needs parent is all about. But we actually got her diagnosis, you know, through mail and through testing through them. But we actually had come, my wife, Kristen, was on a Facebook group for kids with G-tubes. And she had actually come across a family who had a daughter that looked identical to Chloe. I mean, they were twins. When you looked at them, they had the same marking on their forehead. Just the overall look to them, everything, you know, when we started looking at the challenges that they faced, they were very similar, and they were looking for a diagnosis as well. And, we were waiting for all the testing to come back, but, they actually got their testing back first, and they came back with that their daughter, Evelyn had boring opus syndrome. And so we quickly went to Google and looked up boring opus syndrome. And we were finally, you know, this is just about a year later after she was born. We saw this is this is Chloe. You know, we started reading all of the medical journals and everything that there was out there on it. We're like, this is where we fit in. And so we reached out to our doctors and said, hey, this is the gene that you should be, not that they weren't competent and able to do it, but, you know, in our research, hey, this is what we found. And this is where we think we should be looking at. And we also reached out to the Boring Opitz Foundation, and they quickly came back with anything we can do to help. We're here to help you guys. And we did get that formal diagnosis from Mayo in May of 2019. And I think we probably kind of shocked them when we were sitting there in the office with Chloe, and they said she has a diagnosis of Boring Opitz syndrome. And we turned to each other and kind of said yes, and kind of gave each other a high five. And I'm sure for those doctors, they probably don't get parents in there that are excited about a diagnosis. And we weren't excited about the diagnosis because, you know, it comes with, you know, the chance for, you know, life not to last as long and stuff like that. But I think we were just in that moment, we were excited that we were learning to watch Chloe and to advocate for her and to learn what was going on, and that we had figured this, you know, out even before the doctors had come back with the diagnosis. Was it was exciting for us. And I think, you know, just felt good to know that with our little medical knowledge that we had at the time, we were able to you know, start to work for Chloe and to be there for her and to figure out what was going on in her life.
Well, this is the first time I've heard of someone high-fiving during the diagnosis, but it's excellent that you were able to do that, right? You know, it's one of the most depressing times of our lives to hear our son's or daughter's diagnosis. But the fact that you had a little moment of high-fiving, you know, I hope it made that moment less depressing.
Yeah, it did. And, you know, I think, you know, we had already kind of went through, since we had, because it was a couple months prior to our formal diagnosis, that we had really come to the realization of this is Chloe and this is, you know, this is the syndrome that she has, you know. So at that point in time, it had already set in for us, and we kind of, you know, had already gone through those feelings of how do we make it through this, and what do we do? You know, I think for us anyway, we just have always tried to take a look at things and have a positive outlook. You know, when Chloe was first found to have, you know, so many things going on in utero, the doctor, you know, came to us with this long list of things and a very sad face of, I'm so sorry, these are all the things that we're seeing. And, you know, kind of give you the option of, do you want to end this pregnancy? I come from, well, we both do come from, you know, a strong, you know, faith-filled background. And for me and for us, it just gave us something to pray about. Okay, we have this list of things that are going on. These are what we're going to pray about. And my response to the doctor is, as he went down this long list of things and basically asked us if you want to continue this pregnancy, was, we have a heartbeat though, right? And he said, yes. I said, good. Then we have something to pray about. We have something to believe for and to move on from. And so I think that trying to have that positive outlook on things, even in the midst of a storm and even in the midst of a diagnosis that doesn't look good, we're going to take the best from it and we're going to make the most out of it and make those good memories with Chloe and make every day count.
That's amazing. It's very rare that you're able to have that positive outlook. At that difficult of a situation. My reaction to those situations in my life have been, well, we can eventually solve this, so I will stay positive. But it's very painful to go through that journey because, you know, I personally realized very soon that I cannot solve any of these, right? I can attempt to solve some of the challenges, but these are things that we have to live through. And it took me a long time to get to the acceptance. I was both me and my wife were very not accepting of the situation, and that got us through a lot of pain. So it's really inspiring to see that there's an alternative way of dealing with difficult situations, right? With just embracing it, and so inspiring to see that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's I couldn't do it on my own. Like I said, it's our faith, you know, and I feel like that's what's been able to get us through when we're feeling down and out, and being able to turn to the Lord in prayer and just know that He's always got a plan for our lives, and He's watching out for us. He's watching over us. And I mean, we've seen it as Chloe's lived on here. We've seen so many lives that we've been able to be a part of and impact, and stories that, you know, she's a part of and we're a part of, or that are a part of us now, that we would have never been a part of, you know, without going through this. And so we're just trying to take the good out of it and try and look forward and live each day at a time.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is that you and Kristen make an incredible team. Just watching the two of you work together and have that faith, I think, is, for me, inspiring. You know, you guys are both home doing the cares, the kids are home. And so to have that relationship and your faith and that positive outlook, I think really has made you the parents that you are today, just from an outside perspective. And it's been really cool to watch, and a good reminder for me and my husband and our family. These are the things that we can hold on to too.
Yeah, I definitely could not do this on my own without Kristen by my side and being there through everything with us. There have been times when we both, have had to lean on each other and to be that positive, you know, voice saying, we've got this, it's going to be okay. Or I'm just not feeling it today. I can you do these cares, and can you take over and do the, you know, take an extra load on that normally you wouldn't have to. And being there for each other, so that because it is, you have to be a team, you have to be a partnership, and you have to take on all of these challenges together. I wouldn't be able to get through it without her. So
I love that. I know you just kind of touched on how you really have to partner up to tend to some of Chloe's cares. Can you touch on that a little bit about what a typical day would look like?
Yeah. So for Chloe, she requires G-tube feeding. So, you know, we're having to do everything, and she's 100% reliant upon us. Chloe has low muscle tone. She's not able to move or do anything on her own. So she is 100% reliant upon us. So she requires full 24/7 care. And my day kind of starts with Chloe is watching her overnight. I do the overnight cares for her, watch her overnight and stay up with her to make sure that her machines are running, she's breathing, that there's no, you know, issues or anything like that with her. But we have to do everything from preparing feeds for Chloe. She's on a strict diet to make sure that she's getting everything that she's supposed to. We have to do normal everyday trach cares, you know, taking care of her trach, which in the beginning we felt like, oh my gosh, how am I going to take care of my daughter? Like, that's her airway. That seems so overwhelming for two people that, we didn't have any medical training, any medical knowledge. My medical knowledge really was the fact that I was a type 1 diabetic for now about 27 years. And that was the extent of my medical knowledge. But, you know, how do we take care of someone that is basically on life support and taking care of her trach and her, you know, all of these things? And the doctor said, well, you'll be able to do this, you'll figure it out. And thankfully they were right. We did figure it out. And taking care of a trach now is basically the same as you and I brushing our teeth. You know, it's as easy as that. Taking care of cleaning around that area and changing out her ties and taking care of her G-tube site. We do different physical therapies for her throughout the day and get her through classes, through school that she's now in. We do all that virtually and get her up, and you have to reposition her into different, chairs or different standers, different laying down options to prevent her from getting bed sores or anything like that. Try and do all that, as well as still maintain like, hey, I'm not just your nurse or your doctor, I'm also mom and dad. And I think, that's the thing to kind of juggle around. And I think it's a hard thing for a lot of families is because you have to wear multiple hats. You don't get to just be mom or dad. There's a lot of stuff going on that we could have nursing in our home to help take care of. But really, we found for us that nursing was hard to, hard to come by and just wasn't real reliable. And so it actually worked better for us to be able to provide all of that care ourselves and juggle the, okay, I'm your nurse and dad to help take care of everything. So
that's a lot to take care of.
Josh, the other piece, you have three other kiddos. So having to kind of spread your time between there and then let me know if this has changed, but I know that at one point, and I think prior to COVID, you had transitioned Cole over to virtual school as well. What does that look like for the rest of the kids? And what is kind of the reasoning behind that?
So for our family, yeah, we had been real careful with Cole. He was in school before COVID started. And, we already had to be extremely careful through respiratory season for anyone, you know, with any respiratory condition. That could be a really difficult season. And so we were already taking precautions of wearing masks and when we get home, Cole would come home from school and we would get him right in the bath to kind of wash all those germs off. But we did start to transition him actually right before COVID hit, and then COVID came on and everybody was on board with doing, virtual school. And so Cole does school virtually, and he actually really thrives in that, really enjoys it. He is such a social person though. And so I know that it's hard for him not to be with other kids all the time. And so he has helped advocate even for himself, and we helped a little bit as well, but to, be able to have time just after their normal school day, they normally would just be done and shut their computers off and go on their way. And he's advocated to have time to have some just social interaction with the other kids where they're able to stay online with school for a little bit longer for, an hour or two, sometimes even afterwards, to be able to just have those interactions and play and have just some free time to be able to have that interaction, which has been really good for him. But yeah, it is, one of those things to juggle, being nurse and dad to Chloe. But yeah, we have three other children that are all requiring care and need love and support. And I think that's why it's been so important for us and why it's worked out well that Chris and I have both been home to be able to shoulder that load. To leave one of us home alone to try and shoulder that load, I don't think we would have the positive results that we've had. I don't think that our kids would be doing as well. But with both of us here at home, one of us might be caring for Chloe and the other is able to, still help with the other children. And I think that's also helped our children to see how we help take care of others. Down to our 2-year-old, that if she sees Chloe has, Chloe doesn't swallow her spit. And so that has to come somewhere. So that comes out her mouth usually. And, so we've got a suction machine that you just hook up and we can suction her mouth. But, down to our 2-year-old that sees that and runs up and we'll turn the suction machine on herself and suction Chloe's mouth. Our children are seeing, how we love and care for Chloe. And that's not stuff that you can just teach kids through telling them about it, stuff that they see, through your actions and see you taking care of her and that compassion and stuff like that, our kids are getting to learn those, real life qualities that I think really will in the long run make them much better people, better members of society, and just give them a different outlook on life where they don't take things for granted. They see their sister on a daily basis, Life isn't guaranteed, and it's not for any of us. But I think, especially for our kids that, have medical conditions where life can be so altering for them, there's just a new appreciation for each day and getting to go make those memories and spend time together. And, I think that's, something huge that our kids get to see through Kristen and I being at home and both being here to share that load. Is they're able to see it from mom's perspective, from dad's perspective, and how do we make all of that work?
It's so inspiring how you guys manage such a big household with such complexity and also not having good sleep. That's the part that always gets me. Like, if I don't have good sleep, I mean, my sleep isn't that great either. But if I have maybe a 20% attrition in my sleep quality, I am not a good person to be with.
Well, it's not always rainbows and sunshine. I mean, we have our days, right? Just like everybody does. But I think, you know, we pull it back. We've got to stick together. We've got to make this work. And we've got to, you know, show that good example for the kids. We don't have that time away from each other. There's no time where, hey, I'm going to go to work today and I'll come home and maybe it'll be better when I get home. Our work and everything, you know, we're all right here together, but we do make it work and try and show as much love as we can to one another and to our children.
You may be one of our listeners who is actively trying to find treatments for your rare kiddo because no one else is. Have you ever felt like just when you thought you understood how to find and develop treatments, there's something new to learn? One more step. Imagine a place you can go to see the big picture and drill down to the details you need today. We at Salem Oaks are building that place. We are calling it the Biopharmaceutical Atlas for Discovery and Development, your self-paced guide to understanding the process of medical research and development. We call it the Atlas for short. Each month, we will deliver at least 30 minutes of bite-sized microlearning content that you can digest when it is convenient for you. We need your help to design the Atlas to meet your needs. So check us out at www.salemoaks.com/atlas.
What was the process or the thought process around quitting your job and staying at home, and how did that pan out?
Yeah, so before we could come home with Chloe, you know, the hospital has policies on that you need to have 24/7 nursing lined up. You know, they don't want to, no matter how competent of a family or parents you are and able to take care of your child, they want at that time wanted 24/7 nursing lined up, so that when you left and went home, there was a nurse there from, you know, from 7 a.m. till 7 a.m. the next day. And that is one of the things that actually kept us in the hospital longer, was having to have a schedule lined up before we could leave, of we have nurses from 7 a.m. until 7 a.m. And, you know, that way Chloe's got care around the clock. But I think we, as a lot of, you know, parents that come home with home nursing, quickly realized that schedule of having 24/7 nursing quickly disappeared, whether you wanted it to or not. You know, nurses that just didn't show up for a shift or didn't call in for a shift, you know, and you quickly, you know, are picking up a lot of those schedules, you know, to pick up those hours, which it's your child. You want to, you know, you're there to take care of your child no matter what, but it can be difficult when those hours that are not being covered are your overnight hours. And, you know, when a nurse is supposed to be at your house at 8 o'clock at night and they don't show up, and it's 9 o'clock and it's 10 o'clock and nobody showed up, and you're on the phone with the nursing agency saying, hey, where's nurse so-and-so? She's supposed to be here tonight. And well, let us check on that. And 11 o'clock rolls around and 12 o'clock rolls around. And finally you get a call back saying, sorry, we can't get a hold of nurse, you know, this nurse, or this nurse didn't realize they were on the schedule, or sorry, this nurse is, you know, not feeling well. Well, that takes away from your sleep. You aren't able to prepare for that and have that, you know, catch a nap in the afternoon or evening to be ready to stay up overnight. And so I was quickly burning at both ends of the candle. I was working all day coming home, and then I would be up overnight to take care of Chloe, and then try and catch a few hours of sleep as we would switch over midway through the night, and catch just a few hours of sleep and get back into work. And that just wasn't working out for us. Wasn't working out for me. I could see a decline in my health. And so we transitioned out of having nursing, thankfully, before COVID came along. And so we went away from that, and I started doing the overnights as my job role, for my nurse, I guess, my nurse role of taking care of Chloe. I have always been a night owl, so it was easier for me to stay up overnight, and Kristen did not like staying up overnight. And so we worked in you know, our strengths and weaknesses, and I took the overnight shift. And, it has been really the best thing for our family to do it that way. When I left my job and started staying home, you know, we were comfortable. We had been comfortable taking care of Chloe, and we, you know, we're good with doing all of her cares and felt comfortable in all the life-saving measures that we needed to be comfortable with, you know, with her. And I think we really made sure that even before we ever left the hospital, we were in that position. I didn't ever want to be in a position where we felt like we needed somebody here to be able to raise our child. Like, I'm dad, you're mom, we need to be sufficient for this. Now, obviously, there's times when we needed to go into the doctors to have them help out with things, but it was really a pretty pretty easy transition for us. I felt like we knew that was the right role for us. It was hard for us having people, strangers many times, in your home. And they're in your home sometimes while you're in your home. And it's not like you have a home set up where, you know, the nurse is off in a different area and you're off in a different area. You know, you want to be there with your child. So you're functioning and living with a stranger in your home all the time. And it can just create some different scenarios, I guess. But by moving away from that, it really was the best thing for us. I do the overnight care. I'm up usually till 4 or 5 a.m. With Chloe, providing that overnight care, because even if Chloe is sleeping, somebody still needs to be awake watching over her, making sure that, you know, that she is, you know, breathing and that her machines aren't malfunctioning. So that part was all easy. The hard part was going from having an income to not having an income. And thankfully, one of the pillars that we had met when we were in the hospital, one of our pillars, had helped walked us through the situation in Minnesota and getting signed up for waivers and eventually to be able to have a program through Minnesota that allows parents to be a paid caregiver. And so I was able to step into that role and be able to take on taking care of Chloe and also being paid through the state of Minnesota as a paid caregiver for her. And although that income is not the income that we were at before, it's not where we were comfortable at, we have made changes to our lives to be able to make it work and to be able to push forward and to be able to, you know, provide the best that we can for our children.
Well, Josh, I'm curious. I obviously know the answer to this, but can you tell our team and the audience a little bit how you and Kristen and your family have been involved in the BOS community?
Yeah, I think, you know, like I said, we got involved actually with them even before Chloe was diagnosed. And, you know, so from the very beginning, you know, they had reached out to us to offer any assistance that we needed. And we were just so blessed to feel like we had a family. I think so many people that don't have, so many families that don't have a diagnosis or have just such a small group, you know, it can be hard when you don't feel like you necessarily fit in anywhere. And when the Boring Opitz Syndrome Foundation reached out to us, we just really felt like we fit in, we connected. And, you know, that for us was just huge in that time of, you know, receiving this diagnosis and kind of feeling like, how do we do all of this? And so they have been a huge resource for us, but that we've been able to now, you know, help out with and to get back and be there for other families. And, you know, part of that even is through a little bit of our online presence with Chloe. You know, if you get a diagnosis, you run to your computer and you punch in your diagnosis and what does it come back with? And you know, we have had a presence with Chloe online and been able to help other families you know, through their journey and saying, hey, we see what you guys are doing and how you're accomplishing this. How do you make it work? You know, kind of some of the same questions that we've answered today and talked about today that other families have. And so through that and through the Boring Open Syndrome Foundation, being able to be there, you know, for other families, you know, we, you know, have posted some of our stuff on their groups and been able to, you know, have interaction with other families to help be pillars for them and help give them some inspiration that they can get out, they can go and they can travel, they can still go and do these things. And, you know, being a part of that foundation has just been huge for us. Like I said, feeling like you're plugged in, you're part of a family, and being able to give back to others. I just don't feel like we're put on this earth to just kind of go through day to day and just pledge through it. I feel like there is reason and there's, we're here to help other people out. And if we aren't able to be there for others to help answer questions, to help, you know, help them through their situations, then I don't feel like we're really doing our full reason that we were put here on this earth for. You don't know what other people are going through. You don't know where their battles are at and what they're going through. But if you can be there for them and help them through that, I feel like that's what we're supposed to do. And I feel like for Chloe, she's able to reach so many other families that we weren't able to reach or that we would never have come in contact with before. And if we can help be an inspiration to them, if we can help them navigate waivers, or if we can help them navigate, you know, how they do trait cares or how they manage these things in their home, you know, that's what we want to be able to do. And so that's what we've tried to help out with the foundation. And Kristen, you know, she does web design and graphic arts and stuff like that. So she's even been able to help out with designing, you know, stuff for them with their shirts and stuff like that. And it's just been great to have that family, I guess, that that we fit in with and we know has our back and that we have theirs.
Well, and I think the cool part about all of that is it's not just your community, right? Like we're connected. We have different things going on. And as you were talking that through, you were talking about a couple scenarios. And one of them that I'll never forget is when Evie started using a Dexcom. There we go. We were able to call you and say, oh my gosh, how the heck do I even work this? How do I put this on? What do I do? What sticker do I use? How do I get a replaced one? Like that was a huge impact too. So there's so much about that and the different communities that our kids actually kind of put us in, which end up being these people and these family that we really could not get through this without. And I think that's really cool at the end of the day too.
Yeah. I didn't expect to be helping you out with Dexcom related issues. You know, I think we never know when we meet somebody, right? That's kind of where I was going with that. Like we never know when we meet them, like what they're going through or what might come their way. When we first met, obviously Dexcom was not on our radar of things that we were going to be connecting on. And, you know, I think that God's just always got a plan and he always knows, you know, from beginning to end and brings those people into our life to be able to help out with those things. And yeah, I'm glad that I was able to help you out with some of my previous medical knowledge on myself and things that I was already familiar with. Yeah. You just don't know what you can help out with, but yeah, we've been able to reach far reaching outside of just the Boring Open Syndrome Foundation. You know, or other families with boring opiates syndrome to help them because there's lots of other conditions that require a trach or a feeding tube or require different therapies that we're using or equipment that we're doing. And so there is a broad range of people out there and a lot of families that are struggling through that stuff. And a lot of families that don't have two parents at home to be able to juggle through all of this stuff, right? And we're extremely blessed that we have been able to manage this and make it work. But we know that there's a lot of families out there that aren't. And so if we can help them figure out some of that stuff to be able to help lighten their load as well, you know, that's really where our heart is and what we want to help others with.
And just in lieu of kind of lightening your load, earlier I mentioned Ronald McDonald House. I'm wondering what kind of impact that had on your family. Obviously, we met Cole walking there, and you guys were staying there, ironically, at the same time that we were. What kind of impact have they had on your family specifically?
Oh my goodness. Ronald McDonald is one of those things, you know, like even before Chloe was born, like you see Ronald McDonald, like you know about the Ronald McDonald House, like McDonald's raising money for them and stuff like that. But I don't think you don't understand really what all Ronald McDonald House means. Like you think, oh, it's just like somewhere that provides a hotel room for families to stay at when they're going through, you know, some medical emergency. But it's really so much more than that, as evident here with us. Ronald McDonald House provided us not only a place to stay and, you know, to have close by there, but it provided, you know, those friendships, people that we met there that maybe we didn't see in the hospital, but we met while we were at Ronald McDonald, you know, that were going through maybe a medical situation that was nothing like ours, but you're both going through something at the same time, and it gave you somebody to talk to and to be there with and to be understanding of what life, you know, had going on right now. The meals while you're there, you know, that you're getting together with all these other families and you're breaking bread and eating with them, you know, that time to share with them, you know, and help just be there for others and for them to be there for you. It's not every day that you know, you can go through these medical, this medical journey and have a positive outlook on it every day. You need other people there to help you through that. And there were so many people that we met through Ronald McDonald that were able to provide that. So it's not just a place to stay, but it's, you know, the people that you meet, the emotional, you know, healing and support that you're able to get through there. You know, we did music while we were there, music sessions and stuff like that. You know, Cole loves all of that stuff. You know, the gifts even that they provided, you know, we'd get there each night and there'd be a new, you know, like a new blanket or a stuffed animal or a note from them just showing support. That stuff is just, you can't put like a value on that stuff. They provided a place for us to stay. You know, those memories that we have there, even of Cole learning to bathe and shower himself while we were in Ronald McDonald and sleeping in his own bed. You know, those memories that we bring back from there, you know, are just, they're part of our story forever. The Ronald McDonald House will always be somewhere that we have fond memories of, even though it was in the midst of a trial for us. We have fond memories of there. It brings a smile to our face when we think about our time there, the families that we met there. And we can't say enough good things about Ronald McDonald House and all that they do for not only us, but for other families that, you know, have gone through similar situations and all that they provide for them. Yeah. Sorry, I guess that's the end of the road on that one. Sorry.
Well, and I think it's really cool. You and I have both seen the transformation of the Ronald McDonald House, too, since we started attending. Oftentimes, you had to be put on a wait list and you weren't sure if you would get a room. And they transformed it. I would say, I think it was actually right. They opened all of the new spaces and rooms right before COVID hit. And now I have never been put on a wait list. There's always space available. And I think that's another testament to what they're committed to doing.
Yeah, we were originally put on a wait list of a few weeks. We had to spend time in a hotel for a few weeks before we were able to get into the Ronald McDonald House. And I can tell you, that experience versus once we got to Ronald McDonald House was just totally different. You know, we were at a hotel staying where we felt all alone. And, you know, as soon as you got to the Ronald McDonald House, you just didn't feel alone. You felt those people around you and that they were there with you and standing by your side. And, you know, it just an amazing experience to be there. And I remember before we left, you know, we got to sign the pillar that they were, one of the pillars that they were putting inside that, that new addition that they did. And so thankful for that, that they've been able to expand that and reach so many more families and help other families be able to be there and have others around them right away from the beginning, rather than, you know, being stuck in a hotel room or finding other residents, you know, while their little one is going through a medical emergency.
It's so inspiring. You and Brittany talk about Ronald McDonald House like forever. And it's one of those things that, you know, I've always thought about what ultimately my purpose of my life would be, right? Like what is one lasting mark that I can leave? Building something like the Ronald McDonald House would be my ultimate purpose if I can ever do that. It's just so beautiful and so necessary for all of us to get that happy memory during trial times. So Josh, this has been a wonderful conversation. What would you like our listeners to take away from your story?
I think there's so many things, you know, that we've talked about today and, you know, that go along with Chloe's story. But I think, you know, the biggest thing that I think I would want others to take away from this is just that there's others out there that are going through similar things that will be there for you, that can be there for you. We want to be there for others. I think so many special needs families, are that, you know, for others, like they want to help others. When you're around other, you know, families that are going through medical situations, like there's just a different comfortability around them. You don't have to explain things. You're comfortable. They understand what the daily life is like. Brittany has said that to me multiple times it's just so much easier to talk to you. You understand, like, you know what life is like. And I think that that's really been our purpose. We want to help others. We want to be there for others. And I would encourage others to be that for somebody else. Like I said, we have, you know, a family that's been a pillar for us. Thankfully, we've been able to be that for Brittany and for others as well. But that goodness, the helping others, just to let that spread. There are dark times that you go through in life and that you're going to go through in this journey, but being there for others, putting a smile on your face and moving forward with helping others can be so impactful. It can be so healing and it can be so therapeutic, I think, as well, that I think it's just important to not be stuck in your own little box. Don't just tuck away in your bubble and not reach out. Reach out to others, help others, be there for others, and, you know, to make the world a better place than it was yesterday. So.
Oh, thank you, Josh. And thank you so much for being here today, for your friendship, your advice, your support. I'm so proud to know you and to share you and your family with Raising Rare.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's been great to talk to all of you. And Brittany, you know that our family loves your family, and we're so thankful that we can be a part of each other's stories.
We hope you enjoyed today's conversation on Raising Rare. Please subscribe or follow us on your favorite podcast platform. We would love to get your feedback through ratings and reviews. And this week, tell someone that you think would be helped by our conversations on Raising Rare that they should be tuning in too.